I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, we'll take a trip to Puerto Rico. The economy is struggling, but the music there is thriving. We'll hear more about that in just a few minutes. But first, we turn to Chicago, where the recent shooting death of honor student Hydea Pendleton has put that city's battle with gun violence, especially affecting the youngest victims, back into the national headlines. More than 500 people were murdered in the city last year. And as awful as that is to hear, that's nothing compared to having to live it, something we were reminded of last week when we spoke to Cleopatra Cowley Pendleton, Hydea's mother. Today, though, we want to try to really get behind the numbers and really try to understand how this all happens, why this is happening, and the effect that this is having on the people who are living through it. We're going to focus on one school, Harper High School, where no fewer than 29 recent and current students have been shot over the last school year. Our guides are two journalists who've been writing about important issues in Chicago for years. I'm joined now by WBEZ's education reporter, Linda Letton. Linda, thanks for joining us once again.
Thank you, Michelle.
And journalist, author, and filmmaker Alex Kotlowitz. You might know him from his critically acclaimed nonfiction, including the work There Are No Children Here, along with a third colleague, Ben Calhoun. They spent a semester at Harper reporting for the public radio show This American Life, which is running a two-part series about their work. Alex, welcome back to you as well. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Linda, this all started with a local story you did for WBEZ, where you spoke to the principal at Harper High School, Leonetta Sanders, and she told you how she keeps a list of all the kids who've been shot in the past school year. And I just want to play a little bit of that from the piece. We're going to hear Principal Sanders' voice, and we're going to hear your voice. And here it is.
Lamont Goggins, Marcus Nunn, DeAndre Alexander.
Sanders' list stretches Cedric across two Bale, sheets of paper.
Sergio
it's 27
Penix,
names total, all current or former Harris Harper students.
Barney.
19 shot, 8 dead, one school year. Near each student's name, Sanders marks down gang affiliations, if she knows of any, or details about the death, like shot sitting on porch.
Damari Ward, Ja Gresham.
As I wrote the list, I mean, I just, tears just ran down my face.
Raymond Fuller.
Because it's different when you see it like this. When you see the total number of students in one high school that have been affected by gun violence.
Kamal Brown, Trishon Thomas, Excel Moore.
And I sit back and I just say, wow, like, is anyone else looking at this data? Because every couple of weeks, I'm adding another name.
Linda, one of the points that you and Alex and Ben made in your reporting is that, you know, many people from the outside might have an image that this is just a high school in total chaos, and that this is just, you know, as I think the host, Ira, put it, that, you know, just, you know, this is just kind of ghetto-fied, graffiti everywhere, nobody really in charge. And you're saying it's not like that at all.
Oh, yeah, not at all. It's a terrific place. I mean, it feels good. You can listen to Principal Sanders in the This American Life stories, hours, or you can, I think it even comes through when she's desperately, you know, grieving in that clip we just heard. I mean, in that clip, I'm talking to her in the basement of a Southside church. She's at the funeral for the third student and the 27th, at that point, 27th student shot sort of on her list. Her strength, I mean, she, for one, you know, just sets the tone for the school. She's extremely positive, sort of a force of nature. And yeah, the school is a very happy place. It's a place where adults sort of approach the students as, you know, hey, we're here to help you on your way. And when you mess up, we're going to put you back on the right path. We're going to correct you. But it doesn't feel sort of like a prison at all. And it really feels like a very happy school.
But and so I think the point that you're making is they are competent. They are capable. They are trying to do their best. But I just have to play another scene where the assistant principal asks a new student, Jordan, about what's going on with him. And Jordan tells him that he's with a gang. It's called Face World. And he explains the sort of the territory. And here it is. Let me just play that clip.
Well, we clicked up with J-Town right there on 69th.
Who else are y'all clicked up with?
Hoodville, Low Block. Hit Squad, COB. We got a lot of people want to get into it with us, though. I ain't gonna lie.
I know. Your name was hot last spring. What was going on last spring?
It's a war zone around now. I can't lie. It just was on. People like, because we so close to each other, it don't make no sense. Because we right, our opposition is right down the street. Literally, it's on the next block. So, like, we on 70th and Rockwell, and they on 71st and Rockwell. That's how close we is.
So Linda, to that point, and Alex, I'm going to hear from you on this too, but Linda, I want you to start. Why is it a war zone?
Well, in part for what this boy is describing, you know, this sort of block-by-block gang configuration. You know, what you have is essentially a completely sort of balkanized situation. We found more than 15 gangs operating in just the attendance area around Harper alone. In the police district, for instance, where this school sits, there are the police record more than 22 gangs operating, and they're you know, not everyone would call these gangs. They're factions of what used to be called the gangster disciples, a big gang with a structure and a hierarchy. This is sort of now a block by block situation where sometimes the oldest kids in charge are actually just in high school, and the one common denominator they have is they've got guns. And, you know, they're shooting, and kids find themselves very caught up in this. You know, one of the key things we found that comes across in that first hour of This American Life is that, you know, kids are essentially assigned a gang affiliation. And one boy told me, a serious kid, a serious athlete, serious about school, he told me, look, I can't do anything about that. It's based on where I live. He said, I do everything I can to try to minimize it. But I know that I can't get rid of it. And when that kid goes to get a donut or a hot chocolate at the store, that confronts him. When he goes to school, it confronts him.
Oh, in fact, Linda, you actually talked to the police officer assigned to Harper, and you asked him, if you're a kid and you want nothing to do with this gang stuff and you don't want to be a part of it, just say no, is what they, you know, used to say. What do you do? And this is what he said.
You can't. It's not going to happen. It used to be, if you played sports or you were academically better than the average kid, they didn't bother you. Now it's different. It doesn't matter. If you live here, you're part of them. You know, you live on that block or you live in that area, you're one of them. The way they get to school, they have to come to school with one of these factions, one of these gangs. They're going to come to school with them. They don't have a choice.
Alex, you've been writing about this, doing reporting on this issue for a very long time. I think a lot of people may remember the film The Interrupters that you produced that was about a group of former gang members who were trying to literally interrupt and get in the middle of kind of conflicts. What else is it that people, you think, outside of the area just don't get about this?
Right. Well, I think there's a really telling moment in that first clip you played when the high school student says it just doesn't make any sense. And I think there's something to that. I mean, I think what was clear to us, and it was also clear when I was working on The Interrupters, is that so much of the fighting is over such petty, seemingly petty matters. You know, somebody looked at a girl wrong, somebody stepped on somebody's toe, or they cut in line. And I think what has become clear to me is that there's just all this anger built up in these kids that really have nothing to do with the moment. You know, maybe something going on at home. Maybe it's a moment of violence that they've witnessed themselves and haven't really sort of really begun to sort of understand and grapple with. But it was, I mean, I think the notion that it doesn't make any sense is really an important one, because really in the end it's really over nothing.
So the image that a lot of people have, like, these are essentially sort of organized groups, right, fighting over drug territory, for example, right, where there's a hierarchy, a leadership, right, giving orders, even almost uniforms. Right. You're saying throw that out the window. That's not really
right.
True.
Right. And that used to be the case 20, 25 years ago, but it's no longer. And I think it's one of the things that is somewhat frightening about the violence too today is it feels so much more random. And you certainly saw that with the death of Hadiya Pendleton, what was apparently two young men who mistook these group of kids for a rival gang and just started shooting. And turns out that they were wrong and ended up killing this really, they're all innocent, but this girl who had absolutely no involvement in these cliques.
Well, one of the things that you also talked about in the piece is that retaliation for earlier incidents also becomes a part of the cycle. It seems that apparently one of the people involved in the Hydea Pendleton shooting thought that one of the people that she was in the park with was somebody who had shot him a year earlier.
Right. And in fact, Ben Calhoun has this remarkable piece in the second hour about a shooting that took place a number of years ago and sort of how this one shooting has taken on this kind of mythic proportions in the neighborhood and has led to a number of other killings as a result. And yet nobody can really sort of pinpoint why it all began.
We're speaking with journalists Alex Kotlowitz and Linda Lutton, who spent a semester along with their colleague Ben Calhoun reporting on Chicago's Harper High School for the public radio program This American Life. They've produced a two-part series about this, and they're reporting on all the things that people think are true about gang violence and youth violence that apparently are not. And Alex, one of the other points that you've made is you've compared people who've seen violence like this to soldiers coming home with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. Let's talk a little bit about that, if you would.
Right. So I embedded myself with the two social workers in the school, these two remarkable women, Crystal Smith and Anita Stewart. And as Linda had suggested, I mean, one of the things is you walk into that school building and it's clear that it's a refuge. And more than that, it's clear that the adults in that building really care about those kids. And this is a place where kids would go into the social work room just to hang out. And so I spent the 4 months with Anita and Crystal as they worked with two young men, both who had been privy to the violence. And one of the boys in the piece coming up in this next hour is a kid who's witnessed an incredible amount of violence. In fact, he was with that girl whose funeral we're at with in that first piece of tape you played, Shikaki Aspi, and he's on a porch with her when a gunman comes up and starts shooting and kills her. And he's just traumatized. And what becomes clear over the course of the semester is he's got this incredible anger, and he talks about how he wants to hurt someone. He's just constant. He wants to hurt someone. And it becomes quite apparent it's the only way he can find any relief. And so you're absolutely right. I mean, you see the very same kind of symptoms that you see in veterans returning from combat. You know, kids who have flashbacks, who have hallucinations, who are depressed, who are filled with this kind of uncontrollable rage.
And it's not just people who are victims of intentional violence who are suffering. I also want to play now a clip of tape where you hear from a student, Devante, who accidentally shot and killed his younger brother when they found a gun in their home. And he's talking to two social workers, and let's listen to this.
So what about sleeping and all of that, Devante? Are you sleeping okay?
Yeah.
What you do at night to help you, though?
To go to sleep? Mm-hmm. I take some NyQuil. Oh,
you still take a NyQuil?
Man, I take it on a regular basis. Because I need to go to sleep, man.
So we need to talk
I need
about
to sleep tight.
So what happens if you don't take the NyQuil?
I don't go to sleep.
So, Alex, talk about this. I mean, with all that we've been talking about how many people who've been affected by this, and this is his only recourse, even though he's got people around him who care, what does that say?
Right. I mean, this is just a horrific story. I mean, Devante, at the age of 15, tragic story, and fiddling around with a gun, accidentally shot and killed his 14-year-old brother. And he's just filled, as you can imagine, with all this guilt. His one lifeline are these two social workers. And here in that piece of tape, you hear how he's not surprisingly has trouble sleeping. And so the only way he can put himself to sleep is to drink NyQuil. He's a kid who sort of has begun not to believe in himself. He talks at one point about just how much he hates who he is. Somehow we've got, I mean, fortunately, he's got Crystal and Anita working with him, but even that isn't enough. But the truth of the matter is I think we've kind of neglected the trauma that these kids experience. I mean, it erodes, I think, their very soul. And I think we ignore it at our own peril.
Linda, we can't let you go without asking, where do the kids get the guns?
Well, that's a question we're going to answer this next hour. And, you know, I talked to a group of kids and essentially there are guns everywhere. I mean, I got the impression after reporting there and specifically talking to kids about that question, it's just an ocean of guns out there. Kids can get guns almost anywhere. I had boys tell me they could get guns by making a phone call almost everybody is connected to some gang and all these gangs have guns. We detail a kid. We talk to a kid who finds a gun at age 12. He finds a gun laying in the alley. So you'll hear that story this week's This American Life.
Alex, before we let you go, I feel that I can ask you this because you've done a lot of independent reporting work as well. What do you hope will happen as a result of more people knowing about this? Because obviously the people living with this have known this for some time.
Right.
What do you hope is going to happen?
Right. Well, you hope that resignation somehow dissipates. And it's not only the resignation of people living in these neighborhoods, but I think the resignation of the rest of us. And I think, spending time at a place like Harper or spending time with the individuals we did with the Interrupters, it's clear that there are ways out of this. And everything from mentoring to greater gun control laws to opening that window of opportunity in these communities to somehow dealing with the trauma, there are ways in to it. But I feel like if we're really serious in this country about dealing with the kind of profound poverty we see in our cities, we've got to figure out a way to tackle this violence.
Alex Kotlowitz is an author and journalist. He joined us from member station WCQS in Asheville, North Carolina. Linda Lutton is an educational reporter at WBEZ in Chicago. She joined us from their studios there. They're reporting on Harper High School for This American Life, airs on most stations this weekend. Thank you both so much, and your colleague Ben Calhoun for your reporting on this.
Thanks for having us, Michelle. Yeah.